Welcome to the Produce Industry Podcast Global Fresh Series, your audio source for international produce markets, trends, market reports, and community discussion. Join us somewhere in the world as we cover all aspects of the international produce and supply chain industry. Ladies and gentlemen, here is your host, Juanita Galio.
Well, 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 welcome and bienvenue, fresh produce aficionados. This is our first show of 2026. At the Global Fresh Series, where freshness knows no borders, although you still need to bring your passport so I can personally stamp it with a piece of fresh fruit or vegetable. I'm your host, Juanita Galio, coming to you from Long Beach, California, where history, hospitality, and fresh produce come together in one delicious salad mix. Happy New Year, everyone. How was your holiday? Many of you are still on vacation because I know that in Europe, most people are not back to work until probably next Monday. So I hope that you're enjoying these last bits of days on holiday. Now, to kick off this first episode of the Global Fresh Series, we're recapping what shaped the fresh produce industry in 2025 and looking ahead to where we're headed in 2026. As I have mentioned in prior episodes, 2025, at least to me, and hopefully to you, it felt like an 8.7 magnitude earthquake for our industry, beginning with widespread uncertainty around tariffs. When I attended Fruit Logistica last February, tariffs dominated the conversation. By the time CPMA took place in Quebec, I noticed the discussion had grown much more vocal as I was walking the aisles. It was truly out of the box. And then fast forward 7 months to Fruit Attraction in Madrid, this past October, tariffs were barely mentioned. Instead, I heard a lot of chatter with the suppliers. They were focused on building new trading partnerships, and their interest was really in opening up new export markets. The fresh produce industry is no stranger to disruption. Our supply chain has learned how to pivot and how to pivot quickly as conditions shift without warning. You can have a perfect crop ready for harvest, and suddenly, like we saw in Valencia, Spain, or more recently with the catastrophic floods in Washington State, events go beyond our control. Everything can change in a moment's notice. From climate extremes to geopolitics, we know that anything can impact harvest, logistics, and ultimately the bottom line. And that reality continues to shape how our industry evolves. Maybe that is what attracts many of us to this industry. Most people who I have met working in fresh produce have been here for years and say they can't imagine doing anything else. And we all come from very diverse backgrounds. I have seen this industry evolve from doing business with a handshake with no computers or emails, sending orders by fax, to now everything is automated. Even in the fields, it was sensors monitoring soil and water output. And speaking of automation, I would like to make note that is more the norm today that when you are calling a fresh produce company a supplier, and this also, I mean, this mainly has to do with the larger companies, you seldom, if ever, reach a live person. There is an automated response to your call to leave a message and someone will return your call. Well, I have to tell you, I've been waiting for at least a year or two and I've still never received a call back. One company that I've called has the hang up after they, you know, here's an automated response, leave your message. You never even have a chance to leave the message because it just clicks off. So what if I'm calling to place an order? I'm just curious of all the business you might have lost. Well, we have a lot to cover today from the recent USMCA review that could shape the future of fresh produce trade to agribusiness roundtable discussions with the U.S. ambassador. But before we meet today's featured guests, let's take a moment to shine our first-class sponsor, because they are a true leader in the world of spuds. And I'm talking proudly Canadian and proudly Manitoban. Their Manitoba is a true potato powerhouse. growing top quality potatoes and storing them to ensure a fresh local supply throughout the year. No matter the season, Manitobans can count on homegrown potatoes to elevate everyday meals or shine in holiday dishes. And our next Canadian sponsor, the DRC, also known as the Fruit and Vegetable Dispute and Resolution Corporation, they are invaluable when it comes to ensuring that you trade in confidence, as they help you navigate through trade issues that can require their expertise. Make sure to stop by their booth at Fruit Logistica 2026, located in Hall 25, B22, to meet their inspirational team. Now, it's that time of the episode where I want you to grab a healthy piece of fruit as we cut to commercial.
120 years ago, in Groningen, the Netherlands, a small produce business began, trading fresh local fruits. By the 1930s, the Vandenberg family moved to Rotterdam, Europe's burgeoning fruit hub. But when the 1940s brought turmoil, they fled to America, rebuilding their legacy in fresh produce. In 1958, Jack Vandenberg became a trailblazer, importing fresh Chilean fruit to the US, opening doors to global flavors. Today, that spirit of growth and innovation continues with sustainable packaging, carbon footprint tracking, and the finest fruit varieties. We're redefining freshness for the future. Family, fresh, innovation, celebrating a legacy 120 years in the making. This is Jack Vandenberg.
And we are back. I am honored and excited to introduce our guest. Ladies and gentlemen, drum roll please. Introducing the president of the Canadian Produce Marketing Association, Mr. Ron Lemaire. Leading Canada's premier trade association for 14 years, Ron brings a wealth of international knowledge to the industry with his expertise in government relations and public-private partnerships. He has had a challenging 2025, facing tariffs as headwinds, and as we mentioned, pivoting to enhance and grow export business. So Ron, without further ado, welcome to the show.
Hey Juanita, it's great being here.
We're really pleased to have you here. It's a pleasure to have you join me today and talk about what happened in 2025. It certainly was not your average year in fresh produce trade. It felt as though we had a wind tunnel, and hopefully 2026 will be more of a gentle breeze. What were your thoughts as 2025 began? And I'd like to say that the fresh produce year seems to kick off with a Fruit Logistica, as that is the first major show of the year, and everyone is talking there about major issues. So I just want to get your take on, you know, where do we start and kind of roll it through the year.
You know what? 2026 now is going to be quite interesting. But let's back up to 2025. So some of your comments at the beginning were spot on. And when we start looking at where and what's going to happen in 2026, we have to reflect on what happened in 2025 and the concept around predictability. You know, globally, we are dealing still with supply chain challenges, the geopolitical environment, everything you talked to in your introduction, and the tariff modeling that came into play, especially in North America. But that North America tariff challenge that we saw coming out of the U.S. administration influenced global trade patterns. And
hugely. Is it my imagination, or do you feel I was correct in saying it was a major earthquake shift?
Major earthquake. Because, you know, when you sit down and you look at stability, our industry loves stability. It loves predictability. It loves understanding, you know what, I'll deal with Mother Nature. I'll deal with a challenge that I may have on a crop. But when you add Mother Nature, as you mentioned, the atmospheric rivers and challenges that we saw in the Northwest, British Columbia also saw those same challenges, and luckily we didn't have anything in the ground compared to what we saw in the US. But growers, packers, shippers, and the buying community, you know, they have backup plans, but no one wants to be continually delivering on those backup plans. And it felt like in 2025, we were always going to plan B. And a big part of that strategy actually almost put a playbook together for many of the buy community, especially in Canada, to start looking at how are we effectively managing an entire supply chain framework so that we have improved predictability in an unpredictable world? And how do we reduce the cost to the consumer, and how we deliver product effectively? 2025 was the time of, and one of our good colleagues in Canada called David Coletto, he's a pollster, works closely with CPMA. He keeps talking about a precarity mindset where Canadians are sitting there saying, you know, I'm worried about, you know, my pocketbook, I'm worried about housing, I'm worried all of these things about my lifestyle.
It came across as a perfect storm because it wasn't just the tariffs, but we are in a period of inflation. I mean, it's not just the U.S., it's Canada. I know Europe is dealing with it. Really challenging times. I mean, when I shop at the grocery store now, I am shocked how one bag of groceries can be $80. And I don't have much, I don't have anything from the center of the store. It's all, I shop fresh chicken, fresh meats, you know, fresh produce. And so I think it's just kind of culminated where everyone is just, what do we do?
The carryover from 2025 now and here in 2026 is really part of that cost of living discussion. So the turbulence that we saw in 2025 with the tariff framework, but I find it interesting because at the beginning of the year, it was all about tariffs. It was all about how do we manage this? How do we find new supply chains like you talked to? How do we meet the consumer demand? And then the next step comes into the end of the year where in Canada, we had an election of a new prime minister. And you know what? The funny thing is almost like the Canadians said, all right, we put the right guy in the job to be able to talk to the U.S. administration and deal with the tariff framework. We're going to fall back into our previous concerns before the tariff environment started, and where we're going to worry about cost of living. We're going to worry about putting food on the table, the rent we have, the increase in housing, or not being able to buy a home. And we're seeing that not only here in Canada, we're seeing it globally. You know, and
yes,
interesting, right? When you start seeing the shift now, trusting in your elected officials is starting to happen in Canada. And that's flowing back to something I think we can get our hands around. And that comes back into how do we improve our supply chains as a global industry to meet the needs of a consumer and get the right product into the right hands or right mouths for the right.
Yeah. And also affecting the bottom line, because that's ultimately you need the returns to those growers.
The whole supply chain has to work. And you know what? This is where we have different tools that are coming down the pipe. So now in 2026, the Grocery Code of Conduct, it's a new tool we have in Canada, similar to what they have in the UK and Australia. In the UK, it's a regulated code. In Australia, voluntary or moved to regulated. Here in Canada, we are voluntary. And we started as a voluntary model. I was part of the group that helped frame and develop this, this grocery code so that we create better transparency, better contractual certainty, you know, enabling better forecasting. All of these things added to our sponsor for today, the DRC, and the modeling that they do to create fair and ethical trading for fresh produce in Canada. Those two pieces together create a pretty dynamic toolbox for anyone selling into the Canadian market to ensure they get the product in and they get paid and the system runs efficiently. So the world's changing. Now, these things weren't in play when I started back in 1998.
It was just for so many years, everything's just been status quo. Yeah. And now I think people, what I'm seeing is a lot more collaboration to help each other move products across global chains, supply chains.
It's key. And you know what? We're seeing more and more actually competitors, right? So I'm a Kiwi supplier and I got a problem with my supply chain, and I'm working now with a competitor to make sure I can get the product. And competitors realize, you know, I may be good today, but I have to work with my, you know, industry partner to make sure, hey, you know what, I can share some of my inventory. They can meet their needs because next year I may be in the same situation they're in. We're seeing more and more of that on the supply side.
Yeah, I am too.
Yeah, and that's good. Like when you at Fruit Logistica, at CPMA, at IFPA, at Fruit Attractions, all of these shows that bring the world together.
Yeah, in fact, you're seeing this. You're really, it's very evident at CPMA for the first time. I saw the large Moroccan contingent there. So, and yeah. You know, this is what you're starting. First time, I'm seeing a lot of first time events at trade shows, which is telling me. People are not really, you know, for a long time, Morocco might have felt as though, well, we've got Europe here and a little bit to the U.S., but there's people are realizing we need to always keep our fingers, at least even if we're not exporting to these markets, to get to know the players in these markets.
You know, it's funny. A lot of the global market that sells through an importer, a wholesaler, or directly to retail, they were always saying, look, the Canadian market's stable. You know, we'll just work with our representatives in Canada. The U.S. administration shifted that for this.
Oh, absolutely. You know? Yes.
So we've seen Colombia, Peru, Ecuador, Australia, Morocco, Spain, and I can keep naming countries, Turkey, that are now directly investing in the Canadian market because they've expanded their supply chain because of the diversity of trade that's been happening.
Exactly.
And they want to be present, which is good. We're a relationship industry. We want to see the person.
Yeah. That is so true. And you know, I mentioned how so many people you meet in this industry, they've been here forever, and they say, you know, I can't. They really enjoy it. And what I've really enjoyed about it is the there is a certain excitement to it. Mm-hmm. That you know, the way the crops change, it changes every year. And you have to all work together. That's the relationships that you built over time also become friends.
So I just stepped down last year from chair of the Global Coalition for Fresh Produce. It's a group of allied partners, trade associations, 10 of us from around the world. Greg Palmer on my team has actually taken on the chair role. And that group looks at supply chain challenges. You can visit the website and there's a range of documentation that's created every year to support the regional aspects of how we do business. But it's interesting to see the collaborative focus within that global association market, right? Trying to develop alignment. And one big focus coming in is a logistics charter. So globally looking at what is the mechanism that is a real pain point, and that is ocean freight, right? How are we supporting and effectively finding best practices around ocean freight? And here in Canada, going in further than that, in 2025, we pulled together 75 logistic professionals to look at how do we actually drive an overall charter for logistics. We have one for trucking, but beyond trucking, how do you connect it together? And these best practices could be applied anywhere.
And yes, yeah,
this is key, right? It's a piece of the supply chain we keep forgetting about, but if you grow it and you can't put it into the right supply chain to get it to your customer in the right condition to get paid for the value of the product.
Then and that's where the DRC steps in.
Once at the end, if they no one wants the DRC to step in. In an ideal world, they're there just to make sure the world is good.
Yeah, but, they do a great job of educating so it doesn't happen. It doesn't get to that point. So,
agreed.
Well, let's cut to a quick commercial. And we will come back and go a little bit deeper into, for example, the recent USMCA agreement review that's coming up and your meeting with the U.S. ambassador on the agribusiness trade talks. So we're going to continue this conversation, getting a little bit deeper into some of the agreements, some of the trends that he sees coming up that will impact 2026. And also we're going to see everyone at Fruit Logistica coming up.
It's coming fast.
I can't believe it. Yeah.
It's a great forum for everyone to see what's new, you know, to network, engage. CPMA will be there. And I know the DRC has a booth there this year. This year, CPMA opted to walk the floor. And we traditionally have shared a booth with the DRC. But
that's what I thought. Yeah, last year you were at the booth.
Yeah. But you know what we found? We have so many members and so many allied partners that it was almost easier for us to be out and touring. And so we'll be visiting. And if I look forward to seeing anyone that would like to sit down with us. So make sure you send me a note.
Well, let's talk about the USMCA review that's coming up, because I've seen that since the agreement went into effect, U.S. agriculture exports to Canada have surged to $7.6 billion. What are your thoughts on this review? And I know there's, it seems everything that I've read seems much more positive, but there are some concerns about it. So I kind of like to hear both sides, what your take.
So it's interesting. And you mentioned before the break that I had an opportunity to sit down with the U.S. ambassador, and I'll talk a little bit about that. But we have to see a positive relative to the opportunity to look at the USMCA and take time to review. It's a natural process. Mm-hmm. We had to recognize all the good things. And you're spot on relative to this has been a tool that's been good for fresh fruit and vegetable trade, but also agri-food and agriculture. The mechanisms that we have in place have been tested. So the dispute resolution mechanism under the agreement, the sound science and data components. Mm-hmm. You know, the model is sound, and we've only seen growth. And especially with the U.S. shipping to Canada, you know, it's a surplus of exports compared to the Canadian exports to the U.S. We rely heavily. Proximity is our friend, right?
Right. And you have a lot of the growing regions from the U.S. right up at the border, against the border, those states.
We have great partners. And when we sit down and talk about, I guess, the reality of where we are today and where the tariffs have gone and how business is operating, this is a political discussion. And we have to remember, when I talk to business owners, when I talk to the industry is not in an, has, or let me reframe that. The industry is not interested in being dragged into the political arena. The industry want to do business, right?
Yep, I agree. Want,
yeah, you know, and politics just, are stopping
everyone
us.
Just wants to move along and do their business and make money. It's about, you know, again, everyone's in it because they enjoy it. But at the end of the day, you have to have a healthy profit to continue.
And, you know, when you look at automotive, you look at steel, you look at aluminum, you look at all the other sectors that are really at the forefront in the media in North America. And then you start asking the question, well, where's agriculture? Where's agri-food? Agri-food is actually a win. Like it, we can show, and we talked about food inflation and food insecurity and, you know, the number of Americans that are starting to realize, you know, the cost of living is a concern. You know, the latest data that we saw in early December, about 46% of Americans are saying this is the worst we've ever seen it. It's even worse in Canada, with 67% of Canadians saying that. And I think you're going to see the U.S. ramp up in 2026. So the important piece that we have to look at here is how do we enable our politicians to win with agri-food and agriculture as that solution, and why USMCA needs to continue in a tariff-free environment. Because if we look at the risk of, all right, a baseline tariff of 5% on agri-food from the U.S., the Canadian government will do a reciprocal.
Well, everyone does. I mean, it's once it starts, it's a constant spiral.
Exactly.
And it's no one wins. Back to ground zero.
The consumer's the loser in this. And so we're optimistic. So CPMA has been heavily engaged with the U.S. states. We've been working with our partners in the U.S. A lot of strong messaging has gone in 2025 to Congress, as well as to the Canadian government, with joint letters from our allied partners in the U.S. and Canada, and vice versa to each government. And we, at a state level, know they're hearing us in the U.S. And, you know, I'm optimistic. So the key now is how we bring a solution forward. And a solution is the consumer, what they need.
That's what I wanted to ask you. When you're, I know that it's, there's some strong output from other countries, not just Canada, but giving feedback to the agribusiness global supply chain. How, any words on feedback you're getting from this? Are they responding to this is what I like to know.
The feedback from everyone is we need to move back to consistent business and predictable business. And I mentioned at the very beginning, predictability. Everybody is coming back to how do we go back to simplified business transactions, as opposed to, okay, I have to deal with the tariff model here. the added percentage in, can I effectively still sell the product, or do I now have to find another supply chain partner? And then you have a winner and a loser. Business likes simplicity. And how do we keep delivering that?
The more complex it gets, people, and this is also where you get a shift in markets, because, for example, what's happening with the soybean crop in the U.S., yeah. I feel very bad for these soybean growers because they consistently have relied on China.
Yeah.
And now with the tariffs, I've heard interviews from some of these soybean farmers, and they said they have really not, there's really been nothing sold. China shifted to Argentina to purchase their soybeans. So people go where it's easier, and they can have, they can facilitate business quicker and move along, instead of, I like to say, getting caught up in a quagmire.
It is a quagmire. And, you know, the canola growers in Canada were caught in a similar situation as the soy growers in the U.S. And, and you know, it's unfortunate relative to that Chinese market. And this is the global situation we're in, right? So everyone keeps talking about, well, why? First, a couple things. Within the U.S., Canada, Mexico framework, you know, why wouldn't you just work with a bilateral agreement, right? Mm-hmm. Canada, U.S., U.S. and Mexico. Well, we have proven trading relationships with a trilateral framework that show growth for everybody in agriculture. Mm-hmm. And I go back to proximity. You cannot win when you're importing on vessel or plane and adding all that extra cost in, or quality on arrival, and then shelf life on a perishable product once it gets here. Mm-hmm. Now, there are opportunities still for these dynamic markets around the world to sell into Canada, sell in the U.S., but you still have the efficiencies of our partners north and south, and we need to leverage that. And this is where we come back to the essential push on keeping USMCA. We can look at modifying it slightly if there is a need. I know we're talking with the Mexicans about potentially putting a PACA-like trust into the discussion. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate enough in 2025 to be part of the trinational accord meetings and bilateral meetings between the Secretary of Agriculture and Minister of Agriculture in Mexico City. And the Mexican industry brought forward the concept of, hey, you know, the licensing framework like PACA, like the DRC, can help improve business in Mexico and bring
it more stability, more confidence.
Confidence, stability. Mm-hmm. And that's a big discussion the U.S. is saying relative to U.S.-Mexico having the confidence with their trading partners south, right? So we need to elevate everyone's business model within the agreement so that it's comparable. And that's not saying the USMCA is broken. It's saying we just have to have more work and focus on how do we improve it.
Yeah. As everyone has to be, it has to be a win-win situation for everyone. And I think that's what we're seeing globally.
Totally agree. Now, having said that, if I'm a, you mentioned the Moroccans, if I'm, you know, the South Africans, many of them are looking at the Canadian market and Australia. We've seen more Australian citrus coming in.
We're very aware of that. We're friends, especially with the South African contingent. Yeah. And, you know, we talk to them on a regular basis, and we're very aware that they're pivoting. And at Fruit Attraction, visiting the Moroccan booth, they told us the same thing, that they are looking at expanding in the Canadian marketplace, which we have seen, because they've, you know, definitely are supporting the CPMA, which is great.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. And, you know, it comes back, and I think you mentioned earlier around the opportunity to sit down with the ambassador. And, you know, it was a meeting where, you know, we did, you know, it was a Chatham House rules discussion. So there's, I'm limited on what I can share, but I will share the openness and willingness to talk about solutions.
And I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah, no, it was really good, you know, between the ambassador and industry and, you know, looking at biofuels and looking at how do we enable and continue to show agriculture as the success story and move forward together, I think is a starting point. And, you know, when we start hearing the administration in the U.S. begin talking about food inflation and talk about, you know, the concern over the cost of living, I think that's a good turning point to get away from, you know, again, the political environment.
I was going to say that it's really unfortunate that food has to be embroiled and kind of being held hostage in a political climate, because it shouldn't be. Food should be off the table. It's a necessity worldwide that people need, and it's not going to be delivered in a way that the consumers will accept if so it's held hostage.
Sarl met first week, so state rural agricultural leaders in New Orleans in the just recently, first week of January. And what was interesting is, you know, the message that was going into that meeting was fundamental around do no harm to USMCA and create the best opportunity for growers to be successful. And that's key. You know, philosophically, if growers are successful, we have a supply chain that's vibrant, and we have consumers that can get the product they want, hopefully at the price they can afford. And we have growers that can sell. And I was last year on a panel with a Washington apple grower, and they were saying, like, it's hard right now. It's very hard for them, especially with the changes in different market. And we don't like hearing that. As a trade association, I hate hearing growers sit there and say, look, I don't know where
I'm going to into my revenue.
We want stability, you know, as an industry, as a trade association, and stability can only be driven by reduced red tape, which is something we need to start looking at internationally. So within the EU is notorious for non-tariff trade barriers within our sector. And the sustainability discussion is a prime example.
Plastics.
And we need to look at it. Canada's backing away on plastics. So with our new prime minister, there's a much more pragmatic approach and really an economic driven focus on how we report. Not saying the environment has been thrown out, but the environment.
You have to look at it rationally.
Pragmatic. You need to be pragmatic. You know,
when we were up there in Winnipeg, I say in July, out in the fields in Winnipeg, we did some store checks, and I noticed that you can, even if you want to get a bag, they're not available in the stores. Like here in the U.S., there still are store bags available, but you have to pay for them.
Yeah.
So I guess they're just, I mean, if you forget your bags, you just can't, I guess you have to just roll it out to your car.
You have to buy a reusable bag. And that's a whole different story, because how many reusable bags are now circulating is a different discussion. But you know, I think the reality is on the end, we've been successful in making sure the federal government in Canada is well aware. And I think the EU is starting to recognize this, that packaging and produce has various functional attributes, food safety, quality, conveyance, right? And the key is not the packaging in that, yes, we do have to make sure it's recyclable. So it's following what we call the golden design rules. But the key is the systems that can collect that material within the country or region it's going into, and recycle it to create that economic engine within the plastics world and create a new, a reusable plastic that can then go back into the
system. It's just a complete cycle, constant, over and over again.
And we need to move forward, but the caution here, and we're dealing with this in Canada, is extended producer responsibility programs are not being as effective as they should be. The US is beginning down this path. I know Western growers have a real strong push in California to try and have produce and food excluded from EPR because the cost centers on EPR alone will add to food inflation. And it's not to say we don't want to play our part in putting the right packaging into the market, but if you want us to grow, pack, and ship food that is going to get to the consumer at the right price, we have to stop layering all these added costs. And doing it in multi-jurisdictions. So in Ontario, BC, different regions, different structures.
So you're having different prices for a head of lettuce could be totally different in one section versus another.
It totally.
Just because of the packaging.
And you start looking at California and then difference going into other states. So I know the U.S. is focusing on this, and regional and national organizations are talking to it. But this is a North American discussion. So we actually have a survey. We'll be coming out with information on the impact of extended producer responsibility programs on our membership, especially within a Canadian context. And we're hoping, working with our U.S. partners, we'll be able to discuss this, but then on a global level, just like we did on the overall discussion around plastics as an essential tool for packaging, but doing it responsibly, mm-hmm. how do we talk globally about the concept of common material types, you know, efficiencies in the system, you know, for conveyance, for shipping, all mm-hmm. these reasons. So this is a huge global discussion. And the funny thing is, you think it's impossible, but we've seen we are a small global fruit and vegetable.
On a global scale, when it comes to packaging, we're much smaller than we think. And you bring up some very, very good points there. A lot of it also has to do with phytosanitary conditions, keeping things clean. Yeah, you can't just throw a bunch of blueberries in a big bin and have people sticking their hands in to put it in a plastic bag.
Food waste.
Yeah.
Food waste. Mm-hmm. So we start looking at the risks in 2026 and you start talking about, all right, what does the year ahead look like? Mm-hmm. I see some interesting times. So I'm optimistic on the trade deal. I'm optimistic. I'm not saying it's not going to be easy, but I'm not saying we aren't going to be cursed.
It sounds to me what you're saying to the people that you're dealing with, at least they are open to listening, which is a start.
They are open.
And
to
that's
listen.
Where the optimism comes in.
Yeah. And let's face it, the US president, he loves the art of the deal, right? Yeah. So we're going to see curves thrown. We're going to see things happen, but we have to keep our head focused on the end.
We have to just ride the wave.
And I know pragmatism is going to go there and the markets are going to fuel the discussion. So, you know, we're anticipating looking at the equity markets in North America begin to soften mid-year 2026. Mm-hmm. If we start seeing equity markets soften, if we start seeing interest rates shift, if we start, there's a range of things that are going to
impact. And it's like a domino effect all the way through to the supply chain.
Without a doubt. Yeah. And then you start looking at that, you know, 46% of Americans concerned about the cost of living. And then does that become 70%? Yeah. And as soon as you start passing the 50 percentile, you now have a political reason to be active to make sure you put a deal in play that can enable a better cost center for trade within your country.
Yeah.
And not only there, Canada too, Mexico. And you know, Mexico's dodged a bit of a bullet. Like for fruit and veg, their numbers have actually gone down a little bit on inflation. In Canada, we've been trending about the same, where I think it's projected at 4 to 6% in 2026. So it's not great, but I think if we work together within that North American context in an integrated supply chain strategy mm-hmm. and look at a fortress North America framework, we will win as an ag sector and produce sector.
Yeah, I truly believe that. I think that, again, as I said, 2025 was so earth-shattering. Yeah. But now we've arrived at an inflection point going into 2026. And I think it's picking up the pieces. Like I said, the earthquake, everything's kind of been broken. Picking up the pieces and putting them back together in a way that makes sense for everyone. And that will be, and at the end of the day, it truly has to benefit the consumer. Yeah. Because if it's just too expensive and the consumer just doesn't buy, you're going to have a waste problem.
Yeah.
No one's making money.
We've already seen consumer decision moving into frozen.
Yes. Right?
And
that's what I've read.
Yeah. And that's
being picked. Yeah.
Because people are saying, well, maybe it won't last long on the shelf. I want to extend the shelf life. I know I need to eat fruit and veg still. So, mm-hmm. I'll buy frozen. This, while I'm happy they stay in fruit and veg, I'm concerned on the shift away from fresh. And if we see that grow, the challenge is how do we bring them back? The Canadian consumer, the trend we saw in 2025 was because of the tariff discussion and the Canadians, the 51st state, and that's all that conversation, Canadians said the term elbows up. Now, by the end of the year, that had calmed down, right? We originally saw a massive volume of Canadians in our polling saying they would not buy American fruit and veg. And we saw it in stores mm-hmm. through the year that diminished. And going now with 2026, we're hoping it's a rebuild strategy now where Canadians are looking at, because of price, like what is the best price? What's the best quality? How fresh is the product? Back to their traditional behavior and barriers to buying.
Yeah,
and we can work with that, right? But as soon as we get into a country of origin discussion, it becomes much more complicated on
very sticky.
And then you're dealing with another curve trying to sell them a product that we want them to eat. So the goal is keep the politics out of the business
and I'm with you.
Build the consumer confidence up again.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to wish you a very happy new year. And for all of us, all of our listeners out there, let's get, you know, positive, optimistic. I remember coming into 2025 this time last year, there was a real doom and gloom feeling, like what's going to happen? What's ahead? There was a real fear factor for everyone, not just people in the produce industry, but everyone. Things were just shifting and no one knew what the outcome would be. So I think we have, like I said, come through a storm, a tsunami. And as I said, again, in my other prior to this, hopefully 2026 will be more of a lighter breeze. We'll have a few hiccups here and there, but we will get through it. And I'm very much looking forward to Fruit Logistica in a few weeks to see you there, Ron. And we'll be at the DRC booth with the team there and a few other people. Because I love this, to me, again, those seminars set the stage for what is, you know, the trends. What are we going to be facing? So I'm really interested to get to the show and see everyone. And
well, and look for the Global Coalition seminar. They'll be doing an education session again this year on supply chain. So look for that at Fruit Logistica. And yeah, and remember, Canada, we're open for business. So feel free to come and say hello. Love the chat.
We'll be up there as well this year, Ron. We'll see you at CPMA, but first Fruit Logistica. So it has been truly my pleasure to have you on the show. This has really been a great honor that you had the time to be here with your busy schedule. And as we say to all of our listeners, thank you so much for joining us and listening to another just fantastic episode of the Global Fresh Series. It's a great kickoff to the year. We will see you in the fields, on the horizon somewhere, or in the aisles of a trade show, because we hop around to all the trade shows throughout the year. So signing off, bye for now. See you again next week.